Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, and welcome to Big Gay Energy. I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Theora.
Come along with us while we dive into the fun and nuances of queer media. Representation matters.
And we're here to talk about it.
Cheers, queers! We are back with another super fun interview. Today we have two special guests, Maggie Phillips and Kristen Higuera. They worked as music supervisors on Red, White, and Royal Blue. Welcome to the podcast, Maggie and Kristen.
Thanks, Caitlin.
Hi.
I'm so excited to talk to you, and I'm sure that every fan of the movie is also very excited that you're here today. So
thanks for having us.
Of course. My first question is, what does a music supervisor do?
The simplest way of explaining it is we are in charge of the soundtrack. So all the songs you hear in a movie, we oversee. So that means selection, supplying selections, and so all the creative choices of all the songs, and then all the clearances it takes to get them in. So all the licensing rights, all the music rights, negotiating those terms, all the paperwork that comes in.
Yeah.
What did you say, Kristen?
Oh, finding the rights holders also.
Finding the rights, yeah. Finding the rights, clearing them, all doing it within a budget, all the paperwork that it entails. So.
I'm assuming there's a lot of paperwork.
Oh, yeah. A lot more than people think.
Yeah, a lot more involved. The paperwork and the clearances and all the music rights is way more involved than anyone could even begin to imagine. And then on a movie like this, which I think we had like 40-something songs in.
Yeah. It was 39. Just
39.
40.
Yeah, it was intense. Yeah.
Wow. So did you work with Drum and Lace, Sophia, to create the original composition for the film?
No, we don't really. I mean, they're two independent paths. Like we source the existing songs that you find in there, or in some cases we helped create songs. Like we helped with some of the covers that are in here. We helped we made those happen. The only way we really participate with score is we got Sophia Drums Lace, like we pitched her for this project because we had worked with her previously. We love her. So we recommended her for this, and then we help with spots and notes sometimes. It depends on the project.
Awesome. Okay, so my millennial co-host who wrote this question couldn't be here today, and she felt obligated to thank you for choosing the millennial national anthem, Get Low, for the New Year's Eve dance song. It was the perfect song to facilitate Henry and Alex staring at each other across the dance floor while everyone else is getting low. Did you envision Get Low as the song for that moment, or were there any others you were considering?
I'll let Kristen answer this, but wait, what did she call it? The millennial national anthem?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's awesome.
That song was actually one of the first songs we went out to clear. It was scripted. So it was in there from the beginning, knew we had to have it. We didn't look at any other tracks for that spot. We worked around that song with like picking, I think we have like 7 songs in that New Year's Eve spot in under like 5 minutes. So that was kind of like our North Star in like, okay, how do we make this party flow seamlessly?
That was Matthew. Yeah, it's a great song. That was Matthew's idea, the director, Matthew Lopez. But he also, do you remember, Kristen? He said that the choreographer, Kyle, how do you pronounce Kyle Hannah? Do you know how to pronounce his last name? H-A-N-A-G-A-M-I. Oh, sure. He choreographed Mean Girls, the movie.
That's that's amazing.
Really?
Yeah, he did all the choreography for Mean Girls. He's like got a million followers on TikTok and Instagram, and I forget how to pronounce his last name. I'm so embarrassed. But anyway, he's awesome. He pitched that song to Matthew as an idea for the choreography, because like the whole idea was, how do we get them to be looking at each other in a big party scene? And so Kyle, this is Matthew's story, Kyle said that like something like Get Low, they can all get low and they can be looking at each other, not knowing that Matthew had scripted that song in. So it was like very kismet that that song is in it. And
a subtle romantic moment.
Yeah.
Little John and Ying Yang Twins.
That song played. I didn't realize how much you hear that song out there in the world.
Workout classes, always.
Yes, always. Always in spin class. And I can't listen to it without, same, like, there's no separating. Yeah. So.
I know when we're watching it, she was like, yeah, that's everyone's reaction when you first hear, actually listen to the lyrics for Henry's reaction to it.
That was not scripted, that moment. I was in London for that shoot, and I called Kristen, and I was like, we have to quickly clear. They like added it on set. I was like, Kristen, can you quickly clear this line about like calling out the lyrics about the sweat dripping down the balls? they had to shoot it both ways, like shoot it with him saying that and not saying it. So, but we got approval.
So is it like you're only allowed to use it in a certain way? And if you use it anywhere else?
Back to our point where like clearances are extremely involved and no one realizes how involved. But like when you clear a song, especially a song that's on camera like that, you're clearing it for a very specific use, for exactly how it's scripted, for the exact timing. And so any deviation from the scene description or from the dialogue has to be approved. And then, so like if we clear, this happens all the time, more than you would expect, we clear something the way it's scripted, and then someone will improv on day of shoot. If that stays in the cut, the improv, then we have, you know, we have to re-clear it. And there are instances where the improv will be like, we have a movie that this is coming up, and the improv is a little derogatory towards the song, and it might, you know, they might get it might not be approved. The use could be denied. In fact, Kristen, you and I need to talk.
About that
today. Well, glad to bring that up so you can talk about that later.
Yeah.
Were there any scenes or moments where the music that you chose played a pivotal role in conveying the emotions or nuances of the characters' relationships?
Yeah, I mean, I think first thing that comes to mind, and it was actually, I think we can share this, a placeholder, is Perfume Genius's cover of Can't Help Falling in Love. That really, like, I feel like that's such a romantic moment of bringing them together. And I feel like it was a little, you know, plays on both of their heartstrings and running through the museum, the V&A. But that was originally supposed to be another song by Perfume Genius. And that ended up sticking in the cut. We sent that over for to have on set when they were shooting, and it ended up working perfectly with the emotion of the museum, with, you know, the emotion of the scene between Prince Henry and Alex.
Yeah, so it stayed. The other one that comes to mind for me is a Vagabond cover of the Roger and Hammerstein, because that's like really getting into Henry's mind frame as he's leaving, and I think is saying what he's not saying out loud. Yeah, I think those are the two biggest emotional moments.
They were both pointed out by our Patreon members. I have a few questions from them later. Okay. But yes, so they were definitely loved by the audience.
Oh, good.
How did you ensure that the music reflects the diverse identities and backgrounds of the characters in Red, White, and Royal Blue?
Well, we had a good partner in crime, and that was very critical to Matthew and the producers, Berlanti, Sarah, and Mike, who are our main producers on this. And Henry was old school, classic, you know, like he's got the dog named David for Bowie. And so his was pretty obvious, like his choices were fun and clear from the book. And then Matthew wanted to have a lot of Latinx voices for Alex. And Kristen can speak to that a little bit because she really led the charge for those artists. Because she, like, who did we put in the Marias? Who are some of your favorite artists that we put in?
Marias, the I always butcher her name. It's embarrassing. Rigoberta. She did the Canciones de Amor in, like, the montage spot in Texas when they're playing volleyball and, like, you know, having fun with... Oops, sorry. Mm-hmm. There's my dog. Omar Apollo, of course. That was a fun, that was an amazing get. I mean, we have J Balvin, Bad Bunny, Sophia Reyes. But yeah, I think, I mean, Alex was fun to listen for because in the book, in the script, he's described as like the coolest, you know, the coolest person in the world. His people are sending him music before it's released. So he got to be really eclectic with his taste and, you know, I try to sprinkle in as many Latinx voices as possible, which there's so much great music. You know, it's a little bit more mainstream now. So I feel like it's a lot more accessible and easy to pitch, you know, easy to get people on board with that. And, oops, oh, sorry. He heard the doorbell, the Ring camera. But yeah, we had 39 songs in there. And
it's a lot.
Yeah, we have a lot of good. We have some old school Mexican music, Luis Perez for Alex's dad. There's a lot of great stuff in there.
Where do you even start, like, trying to pick music?
Oh, we just brainstorm. I mean, that's what we have to do with every project. That's the fun part of our job, is like just starting to listen. It's typically character driven, story driven, and we started, I mean, we used, Matthew, the director already had a playlist because he had been working on it for a few months before. That's my friend's puppy. You want to say hi, Murphy?
Oh my God.
Look at this little nugget of joy.
Hi, Murphy. This is just going to be a dog episode because mine's freaking out here.
Hi. I'm talking about important stuff. We had, there were fan playlists, there was the official playlist from the book,
Casey,
there was
had a playlist. We
Casey had a playlist. We made a playlist for Alex and Henry, and
made playlists, you know, for Alex's dad. Like, it really just depends on the project and, you know, the time. Like, sometimes we work on period pieces and we're limited to years, so that gets hyper specific. But for this one, it's usually character driven in the sense of like any descriptors or anything that's already scripted, we kind of jump off that in whatever conversations we have with the director or showrunner. But that's my favorite part, is kind of like the master brainstorm. And then as we get into the cut, we see what works, what doesn't. It's a lot of music usually, which is the best part of the job.
That's the best part. That's the fun part. But that's when it's limitless, you know, because then we're just having fun and we're just sharing music. And the director, Matthew, was so into music. So we were just sharing songs back and forth and sharing ideas for the covers. And then it becomes more targeted, because then that was before they started shooting. Like, that was just explorative. And then you have to be specific about any scenes that are being shot to something specific, which were the party scenes, the museum scene. And then you get into the cut, and then you don't know until you start trying to stuff to picture what's going to work and how it'll work and how it'll affect the visuals and, you know, how they'll feed off of each other. But so then it becomes trial. So then it's less like you know, first it's just like there's limitless, and then it becomes you're limited, and then it's like then it's just creatively limited because you have visuals, and then it becomes a budget conversation, and that's when it really doesn't get fun.
Yeah,
then it's just about, you're limited by money. So, but that's the reality of.
You know. Was there any that you would really have liked to, but the budget was just like no?
No, I think we got everything in there that Matthew wanted, that we wanted. We got, I think, pretty lucky with this film. No big constraints.
Yeah, I mean, that's not typical at all. We had a healthy budget because Amazon knew it was going to be critical to the story and to the movie, and you know, we had a really great clearance person who I worked with on Normal People. So she was really good at what she did. Typically we do clearances. Luckily on this one, we had it. There were so many clearances. We had extra help with that. But yeah, we didn't have any that came back. I don't think we had any that came back. I think also, you know, I will say, artists wanted to be a part of this, you know, like, and it was mostly, for the most part, younger artists who were excited to be, like, sometimes you have artists that are so iconic, so big that it's not that they don't care, but it's just like, you know, this is our price no matter what, you know, but like, we had artists that were willing to work within our budget too. So that was helpful because people were really excited to be part of the project. Yeah, we were fortunate in this one. That's so rare. Yeah. I mean, it's almost never. I would say like this might be the first time in an interview. I've been doing this for almost 20 years. It might be the first time where I'm like, no, we weren't limited by budget, but we really weren't. So
that's awesome. Speaking of big artists, the film doesn't feature any Taylor Swift songs, but if you could add one, which song would you choose and why?
Oh,
well,
I was not ready for this.
I mean, one was one was discussed. London Boy. It's called London Boy, right?
Yeah, London Boy.
I'm not a Swiftie. That was discussed. I don't know why it was shot down.
I don't know either. We talked about that extensively, and then yeah. I think we just never found a spot for it.
I think it's that there wasn't a spot for it, and I think then we considered it for maybe second end credits, meaning it would come on like 2 minutes into the credits. I think there was discussion like that would be the only spot for it. And that seemed like not a fair spot for a Swift, you know, Taylor Swift song, you yeah. know, like that there's, if we're not going to be able to find a great placement for it, there's no reason to do it. So yeah, I would, that was the only Taylor Swift song that was considered. So.
What was your just favorite pieces, like songs from the film?
Ooh.
That's a good question.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's been a while.
I know. I mean, it's gonna take a moment to answer.
And also, all ours are like loaded with the conversations behind it. Like, I mean, I love the David Bowie song that you can barely hear, and I'm more a Henry. I'm also, it's because I'm older. I'm more classic rock, so I loved the Uphill Backwards.
I loved Oliver Sim, his rendition, his reimagining of Fruit, just because that was an artist we really wanted in from the beginning, and to have, you know, a special, just a reimagining of his track, it's magic at the end. That's a favorite. And then the whole New Year's Eve sequence, like, we're really proud of that. Just it's wall-to-wall music, and you know, our music editor Jim killed it with the transition. It feels like a DJ's actually there, and it's seamless, and you feel like it's a party you want to be at. So that's one. That whole sequence. Love all the music in there. Like, who doesn't love Bad Bunny?
Yeah. I also, you know, I love the, we're talking about putting Taylor Swift at the end. I liked the Chicano Batman that we got in at the end. I love that song. That was kind of a win for us because that was like an artist we love, and
it was a last minute addition.
It was a last minute addition. Yeah. I think we were on the stage when that
happened. A nice surprise.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Yeah.
Did you ever have to work on a project where you just like did not like the music, but it's like either what someone else wanted?
Yeah.
You're just like, yes.
Yeah, we can't tell you what projects.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you have to, because music is personal. I mean, that's also a common misconception about music supervisors, is that we're just there putting in our favorite tracks for every show that we work on. That's not at all the case. You know, like, we're working with someone else's creative vision. It's someone else's viewpoint. You know, yeah. Like, we're facilitators of someone else's creative vision. It's not our project. We're not the directors. We're not the creators. So we're there to help someone else realize their vision. And I mean, it's very fortunate when we work with someone who has similar taste than we do, but that's not always the case. I mean, I think taste is very personal. So,
and it's, I mean, the best projects are, and I feel like majority of our projects are, it's the best when it's collaborative. I mean, you're sourcing so much music and discovering new music from showrunners and directors. So it's when we're there to serve a purpose, and when we're discovering and collaborating, it makes projects amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one part of the job I really treasure, is learning and growing with each project. Especially like when it's something new, like a genre that we're not really well versed in, we get to, you know, nerd out and do.
Yeah. I mean, the rabbit hole's the best. I love falling down the like music listening rabbit hole or research rabbit hole. Kind of circling back to like clearances and finding, you know, all the rights holders. Sometimes you go on, it's a treasure hunt where you're like looking up someone's cousin and DMing them, trying to figure out like who has this last 10%, which can be, you know, a great part of the job when it all works out. But when you're on a timeline and, you know, people needed it yesterday, it's a little stressful. But I mean, what job isn't stressful?
Sounds like me trying to find contact info for interviews.
Yeah, it's a lot with finding contact info. I also think this job, back to taste, this show, when I first started as a music supervisor, which was in my late 20s, early 30s, I was so snobby about my taste, you know, like so elitist God, I was such a snob. This job has taught me to like really love everything and love everyone's taste and like really embrace the beauty and in differences, you know, in how we listen and what we listen to and what we choose to listen to. And I think I love that about that. I love that that's what it's done to me, as opposed to the opposite, which I think some people expect us to be.
Gatekeeper
snobs, but it's like, no, we love it all, and like we love that everyone's super passionate about what they love. We're equal opportunity listeners.
Yeah.
Listen to it all.
I think that's a great descriptor for the film as well, like celebrating all the differences and different cultures. It's beautiful.
Yeah, and finding a through line for everyone. The commonality in the movie, because everyone's coming from very different walks of life, especially Henry and Alex. I mean, they do have like their elite political families as a through line, but like they're very different dudes. But like they're just finding someone who you connect with and who gets you and who you can experience life together. You know, it doesn't matter where you're coming from. It's just that you find that sort of connection. I don't know. And I guess music's that same thing. Like, doesn't matter what you connect with, as long as you connect to something, you know, musically.
Makes sense. So we talked about some of the challenges already, but like, what are the biggest challenges you face as music supervisors? And you can like use examples from any project if you want.
I mean, the biggest thing that's the most literal and obvious is budget. Like, we're always limited by budget. And then honestly, for me, the other hardest thing, and then it'll be interesting what Kristen says she thinks her greatest challenges are. For me, it's budget. And then the other thing is just politics and like personalities and just, you know, navigating everyone's desires.
A lot of navigating. We call
a lot of navigating.
Middle children.
Yeah, we're trying to make a lot of people happy. And I love music and I love that everyone has an opinion, but like the negative side is everyone has an opinion. You know, like music is the one thing where like, think about it, like anyone who watches it is going to have an opinion about the song in there. They're not going to have an opinion about the costume or like the edit choice or like the lens choice or the acting choice, because like that's something that's like a little more of a craft that is obscure and you don't know exactly what goes into it. But everyone listens to music and everyone has an opinion about music. So when we're working on any project, everyone who watches it, who's involved, the producers, the studio, the editor, the director, the showrunner, the writer, the editor's assistant editor, the director's 10-year-old son, like everyone has an opinion about music, and we have to hear about everyone's opinion, and you know, we try to make everyone happy, but yeah, you can't do it. Can't make everyone happy.
Agree with Maggie. Still learning how to navigate the political landscape. I'm new to music supervision. I've been a coordinator for the past 5 years. So this is only my second film as a supervisor. So the political landscape's still new and will come with its challenges. But I'd say from my point, I think clearances, when you have, sometimes they're really easy and straightforward, and that's amazing. But what I said earlier, just when you can't find that last piece and you're like chipping away and calling people and calling people, has anyone else cleared this before? I'd say that, and it's a lot of paperwork and you just have to be really diligent, and it's, you don't like any surprises. So it's just like, almost like, you know, we're basically paralegals sometimes. But I think that is my biggest challenge often. But for this one, I mean, we didn't have to do clearances. It was just kind of like making sure we were communicating all the necessary information. And we went through a lot of cuts, a lot of music changes, as, you know, we got through the cuts. So it was just kind of like staying on top of everything and making sure everyone had the information that they needed. Because that's also part of the job. We're often watching a project. Sometimes 16, 17, 20 different times, and you see it in all forms of life before, you know, VFX is in, before everything's finalized. So it's just making sure you're not missing anything, because surprises do happen. So you have to, you know, you got to stay on top of it.
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier about like finding the last 10%. So like, are there multiple people that you have to go through to get like one song?
Oh yeah. So sometimes you have only one licensor that you need to go to, and they represent publishing, which is the lyrics, the composition, and the recording. Sometimes you're going to 6-10 different parties to get publishing, because it's split up. So like if we all wrote a song together, you know, you owned 50%, I own 25, Maggie owns 25, but we're all with different people. Excuse me, still a little hoarse. A music supervisor or coordinator would have to go find whoever represents or whoever controls our publishing. So often with, you know, older tracks, that gets a little tricky because of estates. Sometimes it's a little bit more straightforward because, you know, you have major licensors. And we have databases, but those aren't always up to date that we can utilize to look for missing pieces. But it gets tricky when there's like 10 writers on a track and you're missing 3%. You're like, who has this 3%? And then it's like some guy on Instagram that you have to DM and no one represents him. So you're just like hoping he answers back. It's happened, true story. But yeah, that's it's a challenging part, but it's also fun sometimes. Yeah.
Kristen's become a good stalker.
Basically the CIA. Like, I could work for the CIA.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. We would get along. That's what I do. Theora, who's the co-host, always tells me that I would be great in the CIA.
Yeah. professional creeping. It's fine.
Yeah. As long as you use your information for good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So what if you can't find that 3%? You, like, you just can't use the song?
I mean,
we can't use it.
We can't use it, but we have some, you know, sometimes people won't accept no for an answer, so you have to find a way. Like, you have to find a way.
It's like, you have to find these people.
Yeah.
So we have because directors, producers don't want us to be, don't... I mean, some people are more reasonable than others. I mean, it's Hollywood, you know, you don't work with a lot of reasonable people in Hollywood. So when we tell them, if we tell them, like, we've tried everything, we can't find a certain rights holder, most people are just like, they don't accept no for an answer. And look, we don't get paid for our time. We get paid a flat fee. So, like, they don't care if a song takes us 6 months to find. We do, because it breaks down to like $1 an hour, but whatever. I mean, it's the path we chose. So.
Oh, that sounds so difficult.
Yeah, it is. This job is not for the faint of heart. That's for sure. Like, it's a job that a lot of people think they want to do, but then when they find out what it really entails, it's like, oh, maybe it's not the dream job that I thought it was, you know? So
I feel like that's a lot of the entertainment industry.
I think so. I think so. I think this one is, again, because everyone has an opinion about music, a lot of people have this, like, oh, would you just pick out cool songs? But they have no clue all the other parts of it that aren't cool. There's even a joke about it. Have y'all seen May December?
Yeah. My God, I died hearing that joke. Yeah.
There's like one of the characters is like, I heard there's this really cool job called music supervisor that, like, you get to pick out songs for movies. Like, I think I could do that. I was like, it's so funny. It was a joke in the film. But yeah, I mean,
the actress.
I mean, that is a cool part of the job, but it's like 10% of the job. So.
And then you could pick stuff, but then it's just going to get vetoed by other people, right?
Yeah, it's going to get vetoed. Yeah. And even if you get to pick out all the cool songs, which we have a handful that we get to do all the selection, we still have to clear them all. So, and we like weird shit too. So we're not picking the easiest to clear stuff either. Like, we don't, because we're always trying to make it the best. It's, you know, you don't want to put in the easiest stuff out there. So.
You both have worked on many different projects. What has been your favorite to work on?
You mean besides Red Wine Royal Blue?
I mean, you could include it as well, but yeah, other than that as well.
I mean, my favorites are really The Great. I love working on The Great. Has been canceled. Yeah, and Our Flag Means Death. I would say for me, those are my two favorite projects of recent years. And
Our Flag
for me,
Means Death.
Yeah.
Aww. That's so rough right now.
I know. I mean, we just found out it was canceled. I mean, I'm still just devastated. For me, the projects I like are projects that creatively we get a lot of input, like someone who really appreciates our opinion and is very collaborative with us creatively and respects our opinion and, like, you know, really wants to have our print on, you know, creative, like, on the song choices. So a song like that, but then moreover, kind, good people who run a very respectful team of people who care about what they're doing and are just good people. So those are the two things for me that make a project special. And The Great and Our Flag Means Death are the two that come to mind most recently. I love working with Sam Esmail too. I would have to say him for Leave the World Behind and Mr. Robot and Homecoming. Like, he really pushes me and I love working with him. What would you say, Kristen? What is your favorite?
I loved working on The Great. That was just the team, the collaboration, the music we got to listen for, the project itself, I'm a fan of. I really enjoyed working on an FX show called Kindred. It got canceled after one season, but just creatively, that was really fun to listen for. And unlike a lot of the music, like consistently unlike a lot of the music we've had to listen for. So that project I felt really close to. And then we did a movie a lot, 2 years ago, but it came out last year with Dave Franco. Dave Franco wrote it with his partner, Allison Brie. And that was really fun to listen for and work on just because that.
Somebody I used to know.
Somebody I used to know on Amazon Prime. But that was really fun to listen for. And, you know, it was kind of millennial music, which is fun. And
Dave was great to work with.
Yeah, he's awesome.
Yeah, we love working with him.
But those are my favorite in the past few years that come to mind immediately.
No one watches. I mean, we don't talk about Bosch a lot because, it's not musically. We don't get asked about it a lot because the music is very minimal. But we love working on that show. And it's a really well-written show.
Is it easier or harder choosing music and doing everything for like a show that has more than one season? So like, do you establish it in season one and it becomes easier from there? Or is it just like basically starting a new project each season?
I think, for the most part, if we start from a season one, then it's pretty consistent across every season. But if we join during a season two or a later season, usually a showrunner or a director will have, or I guess a showrunner in this case, because it's TV, will have something different in mind, and we're kind of starting from scratch. And it really just depends. It's totally project dependent.
It depends. Yeah. Well, like a Snowfall, we did six seasons of that, and the music was so clear our task, but that show was challenging from beginning to end. There was never, and that was challenging because the clearances were challenging. The budget was really low. The expectations we said it was our fault. We like started off like doing something really cool, and then we had to maintain it for many years. But then, there are some shows that like just because there's no like you've set a pattern, and then it's just following in the footsteps that you've set up. It really depends. It really depends on the project because like that's it. Every project's run by different humans, and humans are there's no consistency, so it really depends on the project.
Awesome. Okay, so now I just have a few questions from our Patreon. We asked them if they had anything they would like to ask. So our first question is, why did you decide to use I Can't Help Falling in Love instead of Elton John's My Song like in the book?
Yeah. Not the first time we've been asked that.
Yeah.
The director's decision. And he's a huge Elton John fan because we were trying to find another spot for Elton John. I don't remember what. Do you remember, Kristen, why?
No, there was discussion about using Elton John somewhere. But like I mentioned earlier, we sent Can't Help Falling in Love as a placeholder. Like that was never meant to stick. It was just meant to, kind of set the scene for the shoot. And then
ended up sticking, but he was certain it wasn't going to be Elton John, My Song from the beginning.
I don't remember why.
I don't remember why either, but he definitely, maybe he wanted a younger, he wanted a cover there. He always wanted a cover or an original there. So that's why we sent the cover, the perfume, like we came up with some examples of good covers, like good current covers. And then we fell in love with Perfume Genius's voice for that spot. And we were talking to Perfume Genius about doing a new cover for the movie, covering a Madonna song. And we were gonna do that, but then they shot to I Can't Help Falling in Love, and then they started cutting to it, and everyone loved it. And lyrically, I think it worked better than anyone thought once everyone started watching it. So it really, like, then we had to talk to Perfume Genius's, I think Matthew talked directly to him, and we talked to his people and explained, like, we can't beat the song that's already in there. You know, like, that's the one we want, so... And I don't, like, there's a thing called temp love, which is a term we use a lot, like when someone falls in love with the temp, And I mean, that factored in here, but I think in this instance, it was the right, like, temp love is kind of seen as like a negative, like, you know, people can't break out of what was in there. But in this instance, I think it really was the right choice for that moment. But yeah, my song was never considered, never. Like, that was just, and that was it from Matthew, the director.
Good to know. It definitely worked.
Well, yeah. I wish, I mean, so that would be a question for Matthew about why he didn't want it. I don't remember why, or I don't know if he ever gave us a reason, but it's not because he isn't a huge Elton John fan. I mean, as are we. So I just, because we did try Elton John in other places. So.
Now, I think we actually did talk about this, so, but I'll ask it anyway. Were there any songs you really wanted but couldn't get, or any that you wish you didn't use? I know that part's new.
No comment.
there are a few that we aren't our favorites, but
that's okay.
I mean, it's not for just us and our, you know, it's for trying to appeal to a wide audience. But I don't think there's any that we really wanted that didn't get in.
Yeah.
I mean, I was super excited to do a cover of a Madonna song. I will say that. Like, I'm an 80s girl. I was so excited. Like, she cleared it. I was very excited to do a Madonna song. So, but I love what we put in there. So.
That's great. All right. Last one. Why did you decide to go with Vagabond? Mary thought it was the perfect choice.
Oh, thanks, Mary. Yeah. You know, we had a big list of artists we wanted for covers, and she was at the top, and Matthew really responded to.
Yeah, luckily Matthew responded.
And yeah. it all worked out. Because, you know.
She wanted to be a part of it. Yeah, I mean, it was all.
I wasn't.
She was definitely like top three for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with that Rodgers and Hammerstein song, and it's a whole new song to me, and I hope it's a whole new song to younger generations or anyone who's probably not familiar with it, because it just like cuts in that moment, like you feel the heartbreak. She created magic.
And that was Matthew's idea, and Matthew, who his background, I don't know if you're familiar with his resume, but his background's in Broadway and in theater. So it was his idea. I did know the song, not well, but like, you know, I'd heard it before. It's from Oklahoma, right?
I don't know. It's from,
or Carousel?
Carousel. It's from Carousel.
Carousel. Yeah. And what Matthew wanted, which I thought was so beautiful, he's like, he wanted a song that would bridge over multiple generations. So a song that like, if someone in their teens or 20s was watching it with their grandparents might be like, I recognize the song, like these lyrics are familiar. And it clearly someone, you know, 30 or younger would have no clue what the song is. So like, you know, it's a totally new song for them, but it's something that could maybe create a conversation between generations. Like, you know, grandparent could be like, well, let me tell you why I know the song. And, you know, like, so it's just like a talking piece and like something that's something Matthew really wanted to do other than like make a sweeping, wonderful, big Hollywood romantic comedy. I mean, you know, romantic story, not romantic comedy. He wanted something that would be appeal to to multiple generations and you know, something that like someone in their 40s, like me could watch, someone in their 70s could watch, like my parents could watch, and then someone as kids could watch and love too. And I think he really achieved that. So.
That's very sweet.
Yeah. He's a sweet dude. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's all the questions I have for today. Do either of you have any final words for the listeners before we wrap up?
What was your favorite song on the soundtrack?
I'm curious. Oh, yeah.
I have to say, like the Can't Help Falling in Love. It was just perfect for the moment.
Yeah, it is. Really. That's why something like that sticks. When I say it wasn't Temp Love. Like there was movie magic was made there. No, I just say thanks for your interest. Thanks for reaching out and wanting to talk to us about this. And we appreciate all the fans and everyone loving it and watching it. Makes us
They definitely
happy.
Love it. They won as much as possible, so we're trying to give it to them.
Aw, awesome.
Thanks for having us, Caitlin.
Yeah, thank you again for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it. And we all loved getting to know you, because I'm going to speak for everybody watching already. And to everyone at home listening, make sure to check out Red, White, and Royal Blue streaming on Amazon Prime. And until next time, hydrate for lesbian Jesus and gay it up all over the place. Yeah. Bye.
And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. If you like this episode, check out all our other episodes right here on YouTube.
Please like, leave a comment below, and subscribe for more amazing super gay content.
And with that, we've been Big Gay Energy. If you like this episode, check out all our other episodes on whatever you're using to listen right now. If you're listening on Apple, we'd really appreciate it if you left us a review, no matter how brief. It helps us get into Apple's algorithm to reach a wider audience.
Please feel free to reach out to us. We would love to hear from you about everything and anything. You can find us on all the social medias at Big Gay Energy Pod, or email us at biggayenergypod@gmail.com. If you'd like to make friends with other queer media loving people, reach out to us to join our Discord server.
If you'd like to support us, check out our merch store or join our Patreon for early access to episodes, exclusive content, and so much more. Until next time, stay safe and hydrate for lesbian Jesus.